Welcome back to another episode of the Biohacker Blondie podcast, where we talk all things health, wellness, longevity, and of course, biohacking. I'm your host, Jenny Jones, and today we're diving into a topic that affects every single one of us, longevity. Joining me is Dr. Julia Cooney, a Cambridge-educated medical doctor with a master's in biotechnology, an impressive career in health tech, and a deep passion for helping people live longer, healthier lives. Dr. Julia is also the CEO and founder of Zest, a cutting-edge company offering innovative longevity panels designed to help us close the gap between health span and lifespan. In this episode, Dr. Julia explains how her unique background in medicine and biotechnology shaped Zest's mission, the science behind key longevity biomarkers, and the importance of a proactive approach to health. She also shares how simple evidence-based interventions can lead to dramatic improvements in quality of life and longevity. If you've ever wondered about the future of preventative health, how to optimize your biological age, or what small changes can make a big difference, this episode is for you. So let's dive into this amazing episode with Dr. Julia. Before we dive in, I want to say how much it would mean if you could subscribe to the Biohacker Blondie podcast or leave a review on your favorite platform. Your support helps me share valuable health insights and keeps this podcast thriving with the help of sponsors. Thank you for being a part of this journey, and I truly hope this information helps you and your loved ones on the path to better health. As the holidays are here, I want to share something I think you'll love: smart labels. This simple tool makes life so much easier when it comes to organizing. Imagine not tearing through every storage bin just to find your holiday decorations or gift supplies. With smart labels, you just stick a QR code label on the bin, scan it with their app, and quickly catalog what's inside the photos and descriptions. The app even remembers where you put it. Next year, when you're searching for that one decoration, you'll know exactly which bin it's in. It's like having your own personal organization assistant. And here's the fun part. I'm giving away 2 free packs of smart labels to one lucky listener. To enter, find the reel for the episode with Zest.Science on my Instagram at BiohackerBlondie and comment smart labels. I'll choose one lucky winner and announce it soon. Once we have our winner, smart labels will send the packs directly to you. So whether you're getting organized for the holidays or just want to make life easier, check them out on Amazon. Just search smart labels, one word. I promise your future self will be so grateful. Okay, well, welcome to another episode of the Biohacker Blondie podcast. I am so excited for this one because we are here with Julia Cooney. You're the CEO and founder of Zest, which is a longevity panel and a few other things we're going to get into. You are Cambridge-educated medical doctor with a master's in biotechnology and experience in health tech and longevity. So this is obviously your passion. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast. I really appreciate this. We're going to get on to the longevity and biomarkers. So welcome, Julia. And if you can kind of give a little intro of what you into the space.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm really excited to get started as well. So look, as you mentioned, I'm a medical doctor. And I think like most doctors, I got into medicine because I wanted to help people. And specifically, I wanted to help people live longer, healthier lives. But after a few years of training, I realized that that's not really what our modern healthcare system is about. We're really good at finding out what's wrong with somebody when they're sick. So we're really fantastic at diagnostics, but we're not so good at preventing them from becoming sick in the first place. And in fact, very little of what I learned at medical school was about sort of long-term primary prevention. And a lot of it is more about treatment-focused sort of interventions. So that got me a little bit down for a while. I thought maybe this wasn't the career for me. I ended up doing my master's in biotechnology to look into how maybe I could use novel technologies to really attack this preventative healthcare issue, which really turned that around for me. I found that space really exciting. I ended up working in remote patient monitoring for a couple of years and looking at both implantable monitoring and sort of wearable monitoring. And then that led me to the longevity space and founding Zest just about 2 years ago now. And the aim of Zest is really much, it's really about preventative healthcare, and it's about closing the gap between health span and lifespan. So closing the gap between the number of healthy years we have versus our overall lifespan.
Yeah,
Oh, I was going to say, I think this is where everyone's going now, is like, it's not just about longevity, it's about quality of life. And so being preventative and taking, you know, the action now and making sure we prevent disease and also live a, you know, a beautiful, healthy, you know, life every day. So I think a lot of us now are kind of aware that our health is our happiness and we should all be proactive.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. And I think this is, you know, obviously it's something that we're all passionate about here, but, you know, it's a massive problem and it's one that we do have the tools to address. So if you look at the current sort of situation in society at the moment, 92% of us by age 65 have at least one degenerative disease and 77% of us have at least two. So that means by age 65, by retirement, almost everyone is actually pretty unwell. And that's really not how it should be. We have the knowledge and the ability to intervene early and to prevent a lot of these conditions. And it's just about how do we get that knowledge to trickle down into younger people? How do we get people being a bit more proactive and preventative about their health? And that's really where we can actually make the biggest impact in the long run. And something that I found really interesting when I was learning more about this space is that if we cured all cancers, if we completely removed cancer from the world, we would extend the average human lifespan by 3 years. Because after that time, you would end up dying of an age-related degenerative disease anyway. Whereas if we did some early preventative healthcare longevity interventions, we can feasibly add more than 10 years to our lives for much cheaper than what we're investing in sort of cancer drugs at the moment. And I'm not saying that we shouldn't be investing in those drugs, but I'm saying that for a much smaller investment, we can actually add a much greater impact in terms of quality of life.
Yeah, I mean, it comes down to a lot of basics too, of just eating real food, sleep, you know, moving. We just keep going further and further away from real food, from sleeping enough, you know, from exercising and getting movement. We're still, so it's like all these things are compounding, you know, and can cause disease or cause these issues in our body. And I know medication is also, you know, on the rise, especially as you get old. It seems like people are on like 5, 6, 7 medications, and medicine used to not even be a thing. I think in the 1950s, it was rare for someone to be on medication. And now it's just like, how many are you on? It's really, it's mind blowing how far we've gone from, you know. So I wanted to kind of get into your longevity panel, which I took. And I think this is really amazing because you make it very accessible for people. You know, instead of people don't want to go to an office, get their blood drawn. So this is just a simple blood prick.
Yeah.
And you pick like around 10 biomarkers that for longevity. This is called the longevity panel. And a lot of people don't even know about these biomarkers. A lot of people are not even doing blood work.
Sure.
People are not testing their liver, testing any of those things. So I kind of wanted to go through them and go through why you chose these and why they're so important.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm really excited about our longevity panel. I think it's something that's really unique and really needed out there. And as you say, it has the 10 blood biomarkers that are the most closely linked to health span and lifespan. And my team and I put a lot of research into this. We spent over 18 months reading over 100 different clinical trials and really distilling down which biomarkers were key indicators of longevity. So when people ended up living over 100 or becoming centenarians, what biomarkers were different for them than others, and what biomarkers are sort of key indicators of the aging process. And we ended up with this list of 10 markers. And I would say of those, the majority of them are ones that I think are incredibly valuable. And really, each biomarker has to fight for its place to be in the panel. But I think a couple of them are actually there because by popular demand. They're things that people really want to test, and not necessarily specifically linked to longevity. So there's a little bit of both.
Are you ready to step up your health game? I'm excited to share an exclusive offer from Vivo Barefoot, the pioneers in barefoot footwear designed to bring you closer to nature and improve your overall well-being. Vivo Barefoot shoes are crafted to promote natural movement, enhance your posture, and strengthen your feet. Whether you're hitting the trails, the gym, or just walking around town, these shoes are the perfect companion for your biohacking journey. And the best part, as a Biohacker Blondie listener, you get an exclusive 10% off your purchase with the special discount code BHB Just enter BHB at checkout and enjoy the benefits of barefoot living. Ready to take the next step? Head over to the link in the show notes or visit biohackerblondie.com to grab your pair of Vivo barefoot shoes today. Your feet will thank you. I also want to share with you my favorite skincare brand, Young Goose. I recently had an amazing conversation with the founder, Emma Tay, on the podcast, and I can't stop raving about their incredible product line. Young Goose is the number one biohacking skincare brand, and for good reason. Their products are designed to work at the cellular level, providing unparalleled results. I love every product in their line, from their serums to their moisturizers. Everything is formulated with the highest quality ingredients and innovative technology. And here's something special for my listeners. Young Goose has generously provided a discount code just for you. Use the code BHB10 at checkout to get 10% off your purchase. Make sure to check the show notes for the link and the code. Treat your skin to the best biohacking skincare out there with Young Goose and experience the transformation for yourself. Are you looking for a convenient and effective way to experience the benefits of peptides without the need for injections? Look no further than Level Up Health, my go-to brand for meticulously stacked oral peptides designed for maximum benefit. Their offerings include powerful options like liver support, gut repair, and BPC-157, and they just launched their latest innovation, Neuro Regenerate, perfect for supporting brain health and cognitive function. Whether you're at home or traveling, these oral peptide stacks provide a hassle-free solution to boost your wellness journey. Ready to try them out? Head over to levelup.health.com, that is levelup health.com, and use the code BIOHACKERBLONDIE, that is BIOHACKERBLONDI, yes, just with an I, at checkout to receive 10% discount. The details and links will also be available in the show notes. Don't miss out this opportunity to elevate your health with Level Up Health's premium peptide stacks.
Sorry, I cut you off there. Did you want to jump in?
Oh, no, but I... questions. I think a lot of them are around your heart health, cardiovascular health.
Yeah.
Which is important because that is the number one disease that, you know, people die from. I know in the U.S., I'm not sure around for what.
It is bad as well, yeah.
Okay. And then also like more some inflammation markers and a few hormone markers, I believe. So,
yeah, absolutely. So I think what we're trying to do with our test is have a really holistic measure of aging. So most biological age tests that you'll find test quite a specific aging pathway. So you might have something like glycan age looks at just inflammation, or some of the epigenetic age tests, they're just looking at epigenetics. But what we're doing is approaching it from more of a medical perspective. A lot of these other tests have been developed by scientists in labs, and they look at how yeasts and mice might age, and they're really effective for lab-based testing, but they don't really consider what it's like to age as a human with a really multifaceted aging process that affects every single body system. And I think my unique perspective as a doctor, having seen people aging in my clinical practice, has allowed me to develop a panel that is really holistic and multifaceted and looks at every single body system. And looks at how aging affects all of those systems. So as you say, we do look at metabolic health. We do a fasting glucose test as well as HbA1c. And for those who don't know what HbA1c is, it's a really great marker of your overall sort of glucose metabolism, if you like, or how stable your blood sugar's been over a long period of time. So really what it's looking at is the glucose that's bound to your red blood cells, or specifically the hemoglobin within your red blood cells. That's what the HB stands for in HbA1c. And because red blood cells live a lifespan of about 3 months, it's a really good insight into how stable your sugars have been for that 3 month period. So you might be testing your sugars every once in a while and you're getting good numbers and you think you're going well, but until you look at that long-term 3 month marker of how your glucose has been across that time, it's really hard to know how well you're actually going. So that's a really good indicator.
Yeah, that one's so important. I know most functional medicine doctors definitely look into that because you not want to be even pre-diabetic. Mm. And the brain is actually pretty high up there where they say it's okay, but we have to kind of say, you know, if you're getting even close to pre-diabetes, you need to take action, right? Like start thinking about a different diet that can lower your HbA1c.
Absolutely. And sorry, just to add to that, I think something that we don't that we sort of look over is that these cutoffs of diabetes, pre-diabetes, they're quite arbitrary. They're just numbers that were selected based on our general population. But as we know, 92% of us have a degenerative disease by age 65. So that normal that we're all aiming for is actually that future. You know, if you're aiming to be normal, you're going to end up with a degenerative disease, unfortunately, by age 65. And something that we do at Zest with our blood panel is we don't just give you the normal range, we also give you the optimal range. So in our research that I was mentioning, we did a lot of investigating, okay, how can we go beyond the normal range? This is what happened to the people who had normal albumin levels, for example, which is another one of our key biomarkers. But what about the ones who had optimal, and who was able to live even longer, and who was able to avoid cardiovascular disease and cognitive decline, and really tightening those reference ranges? And I think this is something that can actually be quite controversial, because we do get a lot of pushback from people, especially healthy people, who are pretty proud of their biohacking efforts. And then they'll do our test and they'll say, this is really unfair. You know, my marker's saying that it's not optimal, even though I'm optimizing my life. And I think that's because our reference ranges are pretty harsh and they're pretty narrow. And you have to be, if you want to avoid that 92%, you have to really be in that top bracket. And it's something that we've put a lot of work into.
Yeah, it's so important. I also love the ApoB. I think a lot of people are not testing for that. I really want to talk about that because that's so important. And a lot of people, I don't know, you know, even with COVID or some, you know, I think maybe some people might have higher biomarkers now of the ApoB. I don't know, for the cardiovascular health. So I definitely wanted to get into that. I don't know if you know Ben Greenfield. He's super biohacker healthy. He also had some high markers for cardiovascular health that he's working on. He found some plaque in his arteries, some soft plaque. So I'm like, this is so important for everyone. So can you give a little definition of the ApoB?
Yeah, sure. So ApoB is a structural protein that is found in other sort of lipoproteins. So things like your LDL and other types of cholesterol will have ApoB within them. In fact, about 90% of the ApoB that we have in our blood is actually attached to LDL cholesterol, which is that bad cholesterol that we all talk about. But there's also ApoB attached to some other types of cholesterol as well that circulate in the body. And all of those are bad cholesterol, if you like, that can potentially cause coronary artery disease. So by measuring ApoB, we're essentially measuring the bad cholesterol a little bit more accurately. We're not just looking at LDL, we're looking at a few other types that would be missed otherwise. And also the other difference with ApoB is that there's only one ApoB molecule per sort of cholesterol molecule, if you like. And so rather than measuring cholesterol just by weight, which is what we typically do with LDL and HDL, ApoB is a more specific sort of numerical number for the cholesterol, if you like. So you're figuring out exactly the number of those molecules rather than just by weight. So it's just a little bit more accurate. And the third interesting thing about ApoB is that it's actually what's necessary for those LDL and those bad cholesterols to form a plaque in your artery. So ApoB sort of helps them to stick onto the wall of the artery. And without the ApoB, they can't sort of form that plaque. So it is very relevant if we're thinking about cardiovascular disease. It's a really important marker of how likely are you to have a plaque form in your arteries.
Are you ready to elevate your health and wellness journey? Let me tell you about Valhalla Vitality, your online destination for integrative health solutions. Whether you're looking to lose weight, balance your hormones, explore peptide treatments, or enhance your vitality, Valhalla Vitality creates personalized plans to help you reach your goals. And here's the best part. Use my code JENNY20 for $20 off your first service. Just click the link in the show notes to get started. Take charge of your health today with Valhalla Vitality, because your wellness journey deserves the best. Are you ready to take your home wellness to the next level? Right now, there's a huge sale on two of my absolute favorite products, Aqua True water purifiers and Air Doctor air filtration systems. Aqua True uses advanced reverse osmosis technology to remove contaminants like lead, chlorine, and PFAS, giving you pure, delicious water right from your tap.
and Air Doctor features ultra HEPA filters that capture even the smallest particles, like allergens and toxins, to ensure you're breathing the cleanest air possible. To grab these deals, just click the link in the show notes for a special discount. Don't miss the opportunity to create a healthier home environment for you and your family.
And something that's been found in the research, I think, that came out in about 2019, there was a paper that came out of McGill University that was really sort of seminal in this sort of ApoB research. And they sort of found that it was a great marker for younger people as well, because for younger people, we know that all of us, you and I both, have plaque in our arteries. It starts very early. We all probably have very normal LDL cholesterol. So it's hard for us to get in early with prevention unless we have a more accurate marker. And that's what ApoB can be really helpful for.
Yeah, I think everyone should be doing this blood work testing because it's so preventative. I think these things that you might not know. I had a friend who just did the Function Health, which does a lot of blood work. And she was shocked about her ApoB and some cholesterol. We all just think we're great, you know, we're like, oh, I'm sure everything's in order, and then you test and most people have some biomarkers that are off, and it can be, you know, a deficiency, or it could be something hormonal that you need to like start thinking about, of like maybe adding some types of herbs, or there's just, and it also helps you feel better, right? Like, you know, when something's off in your body, you're going to feel off. You're not going to, you know, be able to work out and recover well or do these things in your life or have the energy, you know, if something's off in your body. So I really love testing. I think it's great for everyone.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's interesting where the longevity industry is going at the moment, because obviously it's a bit of a hot topic. And I'm sure you and I are both aware that there's a lot of people online spouting their opinions about things who potentially aren't qualified to do that. But there's also a lot of people who are sort of more from an e-commerce background, selling longevity supplements, who maybe they're onto their fifth e-commerce business and they used to sell cold plungers and saunas and now they're selling longevity supplements. And I'm not saying that that's a bad thing. It's obviously great to have more of these supplements available in the community, but I think they're missing a key component here, which is that testing component and understanding why am I taking this and tracking that progress as well. So something that we're really passionate about with Zest is doing the longevity panel at the start, understanding where you're at, getting an idea of what's your age on the inside and how are your key longevity biomarkers sitting, and then go and try whatever longevity supplements you're interested in, if that's what you want to do, and then retest and see if it's actually working for you and make sure that what you're doing is actually working.
Yeah, I think, you know, intuitively you kind of feel maybe better or worse when you try these things, and then the testing just confirms, you know, it's really great, especially if deficiencies is another issue for people that might be deficient, that want, they connect the whole body together.
It's interesting what you said as well about how we all think we're fine. And I think that's so true. I think before about age 50, most people think that they're pretty healthy. And I think most people feel like, you know, I exercise a fair bit and I try and do the right thing. And, you know, I'm probably fine. But it's really when we hit our 50s and beyond that what we did before that actually starts to catch up to us. It's something that I notice in my, you know, clinical practice when I'm working, is that it's quite easy to tell somebody's age when they're under 50. You meet them and you can pretty easily put a finger on what decade they were born in. But those who are over 50, it can be quite challenging because people age at vastly different rates after that over 50 mark. Sometimes I'd have patients in their 90s who are still walking around unaided, driving, no glasses, just absolutely killing it, pillars of the community, really involved. And then you'll have others who are only in their 60s and they're getting around with a walking frame. So it's really after 50 that you see those differences, but it's before 50 that you have to put in the work to decide which pathway is going to be you.
It's so true. Like plaque buildup starts in your teens, you know, Alzheimer's starts, they say, like 30 years before even Alzheimer's happens. Mm. All these lifestyle habits are going to, you know, tell you how you're going to be in 30 years or so. So It's so important.
Yeah, that's interesting that you bring up the point of Alzheimer's. Brain aging is something that we're really passionate about at Zest. I think we're actually the only biological age test available that looks at brain aging. And it's an incredibly important and often overlooked area of aging. And in fact, our research with our community has shown that loss of cognitive function is actually the most feared consequence of aging, but it's the one that nobody seems to be addressing. And we're actually really excited because we've recently partnered with Cambridge University to do some interesting research on brain aging. They've developed a really cool test, which is able to detect cognitive decline as early as your 40s and 50s using what they call precision memory. So just like what you said, these changes do happen early, but we've never really been able to detect them before. And Cambridge have developed this cool new test, which we're going to work alongside them to incorporate into our app to make our biological age test even more accurate, especially for that brain aging piece, because I think it's incredibly important and something that just isn't having enough attention in the longevity space.
I know. I'm so into brain health. I interviewed Dr. Sheldon Jordan, and he's reversing brain age by like 20 years with exosomes and everything.
Yeah.
It really, like, people don't think about this, but it kind of controls your age. It controls your hormones. It controls puberty. It controls menopause or like any, like, we're not thinking this, but when does our body say, hey, you're going to age? And it kind of like comes from our brain.
Absolutely.
And it's so interesting. And I don't think people are realizing, you know, how important the brain is. Like, if you want to work out, if you want to be excited, if you want to be happy, like all these things that we care about is starting in the brain. So if you have brain inflammation, that is going to be all, like, you know, we think of the body and these organs kind of separate, and we don't think about the brain-body connection, and they both are just so important. And when you get older, one can go, and you know, it's either the brain or the body. So both are so important.
Absolutely. I think the brain and cracking brain aging is really key to us cracking longevity altogether. Because when you think about it, every other organ in the body, we're actually quite good at repairing in medicine, especially. I think, for example, cardiovascular disease has come on leaps and bounds in the last sort of 50 years or so, to the point where now people can have coronary artery bypass grafts after they've had a heart attack, and their heart can then last another 20 years or more. Whereas once you have a stroke, that's it. There's nothing that we can do. And we're really limited by the fact that the central nervous system can't regenerate itself. And that's why if you have a spinal cord injury, you know, you can't walk again. That's why things like these crazy brain transplants that people talk about can never work, because we can't regenerate the central nervous system and can't even fathom how we could ever do that in the future. So cracking brain aging and figuring out how we can reverse the aging process in the brain, which, as we know, starts in our 40s and 50s, is something that's going to be really pivotal in terms of this whole longevity piece in the future.
And I don't even think people realize that they can, like, a lot of people are thinking of supplements for the body, but not supplements for the brain. And it's so, when you start kind of diving into things like taking L-tyrosine to up your dopamine to prevent Parkinson's, I mean, these are all things that you can start thinking about, like certain supplements to make sure you have a healthy brain, which is so important.
One of the biggest things that we can do for our brain aging and our brain health is aerobic exercise. I don't know if that's something that you've heard of as well, but the biggest sort of link across any dementia study that's been found, sort of the best preventative measure, is exercise, specifically aerobic exercise, because when we're exercising, we produce this chemical called BDNF, brain-derived neurotrophic factor, which works as a sort of nutrient bath for the brain, if you like, and it allows areas like the hippocampus to really grow and proliferate. And it's not going to prevent dementia ever occurring if it's going to occur in the future, but it gives you that cognitive reserve and that extra brain tissue to mean that the symptom onset might be 20 years later than it otherwise would have been. So you're right, there's a lot of interesting supplements out there, and I think some of them potentially will find work really well, but at the moment the biggest dementia preventative that we have available is aerobic exercise.
Okay. Work out every day. So how do you do this functional age test? What exactly, because I actually have not done it. I downloaded the app.
Yeah.
But you're using biomarkers and a few other things to have that test.
Yeah, absolutely. So as I said, I developed this test to be a really holistic picture of how the body ages. And I think you can't do that just with blood biomarkers. They're a big part of the picture, but we also need to consider things like grip strength, cognitive function, as well as your sleep, your heart rate variability, your VO2 max. All of those are really key longevity biomarkers. So we developed functional age to include three pillars of biomarkers, if you like. We have the blood biomarkers, the digital, and the functional. So the way it works is you get yourself a Zest blood test kit that comes in the mail, and you do the finger prick blood test that we talked about. You send that off. It's really easy and quick. And then you download the app, and when your results are available, which happens in about 1.5 to 2 weeks from when the kit arrives to you, your blood test results will be available in the app. And then you go through the onboarding process where you do some functional testing in our app, you do some brain tests, and you test your grip strength, and then you connect your wearable device if you have one. So if you have a Fitbit, Garmin, Apple Watch, Oura Ring, any of those, we connect to those and we pull your wearable data, things like your VO2 max, your sleep, looking at your circadian rhythm alignment, looking at your heart rate variability, all of that gets pulled in. And all of those markers together run through our machine learning algorithm to give you an overall number for age. But we also give you a breakdown for every single biomarker of where you're sitting compared to other age-matched individuals. So are you in the normal range? Are you in the optimal range? And how can you improve?
This is so cool, because then you can kind of treat it like a game, as like, I'm curious, does this get updated every day, like based off of your sleep or your movement or walking or working out?
Yeah, good question. It doesn't get updated every day. And that's just because the blood biomarkers obviously go into the calculation as well. So the way we've designed it to work is for users to do the test every 3 months. Obviously, that's not a hard and fast rule. You can do it whenever you want. But a lot of these blood biomarkers, like the HbA1c, HDL, LDL, they only vary about every 3 months. As we said, the lifespan of a red blood cell is 3 months. So you're not going to see much change in your overall test. If you tested and then you were annoyed about the result, you worked out for a week and you ordered a new test, you're probably not going to see much change. So what we do typically is we encourage people to order the test every 3 months. Look at the recommendations, see where they're sitting, see where they're not in the optimal range, try and follow some of the suggestions that we have, and then retest 3 months later and see how you're going there.
So the retesting is when you're going to also look at the sleep and the grip strength.
Yeah, so the way it works is that the algorithm sort of runs all in one go. So you put in all the data and then it runs through that and then it gives you a number. There's a couple of reasons why we don't have it such that you can just re-input things and re-change it. I think part of it is that it's obviously our confidential IP, and the more we allow people to play around with their inputs on a day-to-day basis, the easier it is for them to figure out the weighting and things that we've taken a lot of time and research to develop. But also just from a medical perspective, things aren't going to change overnight. 3 months is actually quite a short window anyway to see change. So we do think from a habit forming perspective, it makes sense to do the test every 3 months.
And then how do you do the grip strength?
So there's two options. You can either, if you have a hand dynamometer where you can test grip strength at home, awesome. You can just input those values. If not, then we suggest people do a dead hang as a proxy measure for grip strength. So see how long they can hang from a bar, or a pull-up bar, or whatever they have around. And if they put the time for that in, we can also extrapolate grip strength from there.
Okay. Yeah. Because the device I use, you have to basically grip, squeak your hand, for anyone who doesn't know. And this is a good sign for your longevity and overall health is, how much can you grip, this piece of equipment, and you have to do it for, 10 seconds or something, and just grip as hard as you can. So that's the device. But yeah. Okay. So someone puts that in there, and the test too, I don't know if anyone is wondering, but basically you just get this mailed to you with a little box, and it has a little finger prick, and you just put a little blood on one of those little sheets, and then that's it. You mail it off and you're good to go. So it's super simple.
Yeah.
Also, I wanted to talk about CRP. I don't think a lot of people are testing for CRP, and that's for inflammation, correct?
Yeah, that's right. So CRP stands for C-reactive protein. It's what we call an inflammatory marker. So it's a good measure of the overall inflammation in your body. And inflammation is something that we know is a risk factor for sort of all-cause mortality. I think everybody knows how important lowering your inflammation is for your longevity. High levels can definitely be linked to things like cognitive decline and Alzheimer's dementia, as well as even things like kidney disease. So it's obviously a very important marker. Having said that, it's also a very variable marker. So if there's anything at all going on in your body, if you have a bit of a cold, if you're really stressed out, your CRP can actually skyrocket. So something that we do sort of recommend is that if people are doing our test, because CRP is something that's quite heavily weighted in our algorithm, because inflammation is so important for longevity and keeping those inflammatory markers down is so important. But at the same time, you know, it can just skyrocket if you have a cold. So you have to make sure that you're in good health and feeling your best. But otherwise, it is a really valuable marker for your long-term health.
Yeah. And also, I wanted to go over albumin. I've seen that a lot where they're actually replacing plasma with albumin, I believe, over the plasma. I don't know if you've seen that, but it's really interesting. I want to do it.
Yeah, I have seen that. I don't know if I'd dive into doing it, but rather you than me.
So why albumin for the longevity panel?
Yeah, so albumin is probably one of my favorite markers in the longevity panel. It's a protein produced by the liver. It's the most abundant protein in the blood. It's incredibly important for transporting compounds around and also regulating pH and blood pressure. It's something that we talk about a lot in medicine because your albumin sort of is responsible for sucking fluids into your blood vessels and making sure that that blood pressure is maintained and things like that. But it's also a good marker for liver health as well because it is made by the liver. So it's a marker that can dictate a lot of things, and it's also very well correlated with longevity. So you're born with a fairly high level of albumin. And it continues to rise until about your 20s and 30s. And then there's a steady decline of your albumin levels until the end of life. So you might think, of course, low albumin is correlated with mortality. If it's declining with age, that doesn't really mean anything. But actually, it's more than that. There are some markers, things like having gray hair or wrinkles, which we know are correlated with age, but they're not correlated with mortality. Whereas albumin decreasing actually is correlated with mortality, particularly with cardiovascular risk as well. So it is a really important marker.
Interesting. Yeah. And then I wanted to get into a little bit just of the hormones. I know it's different also for male and different for females, the test. There's testosterone. There's a sex finding goblin.
That's right. These hormones are interesting because they're incredibly important from a longevity perspective, but they're actually a little bit difficult to test because they do fluctuate quite a bit. And so I think this is a marker in our age test, which is maybe weighted a little bit lower just because we understand that it does fluctuate. But it's something that people are very interested in knowing for themselves, and that's part of the reason why we've included it. But just to take the example of sex hormone binding globulin, that's a sort of protein that binds to testosterone and other hormones, which then essentially controls how much testosterone is actually available in your system, because when it's bound to SHBG, it can't then be used in the body. So you can imagine if you had more of this binding globulin, you're going to have less available testosterone because it's all bound onto that molecule and it can't be used.
For that too, where you can have higher levels of the sex finding hormone if you have a specific gene variant. Something the sex hormone binding globulin. I was talking about the genes, and then I don't think a lot of, but then I also wanted to get into estradiol and DH. So those, the sex hormone binding globulin is for men, and the testosterone, and then the estradiol AGA is for women.
Yeah, that's right. And look, as I said, I think these are more measures that we brought in because our community really wanted to test them. And I think there's a lot of talk around about hormone levels and testosterone levels and testosterone in men, and SHBG is what impacts how much available testosterone you have. as well as sort of estradiol levels for women and how their hormones might be impacting how they're feeling. So a lot of the reason why we put those in was more customer demand rather than actually from a longevity perspective. We haven't seen a lot of changes in lifespan for women based off of their estradiol levels or DHEAS, but it's something that people, it's more of a quality of life metric, and it's something that people are quite interested in. But it's one that I'm a bit cautious about, especially around sort of perimenopause. As I'm sure you're aware, the hormones around perimenopause can really fluctuate. And so doing a test one day that tells you that your hormone levels are menopausal, the next day they might be back in the normal range. So it's a bit of a challenge testing the hormones. And it's one that, as I say, is a little bit lower weighted in our longevity testing compared to some of the ones like albumin, ApoB, HbA1c, which are all really core to health span and lifespan.
Yeah. And would you say that most of these biomarkers are being like, if you go to a regular doctor, are they going to do these tests? For most people, I think they need to realize that a lot of these tests, your doctor is not going to order for you, you know? And so it's great to do this panel because these are probably out of the ordinary that your doctor's typically testing for.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the biggest difference between our panel and going to see your doctor for a blood test is a few different things. Firstly, our reference ranges. We don't just tell people the normal range, we also tell them the optimal range. And so if these are people who are very healthy, trying to stop getting sick in the first place, they really want to know the optimal range rather than the normal range. Secondly, our biomarkers were all handpicked to focus on longevity. Whereas in your GP or family doctor setting, they might do a panel looking at metabolic health, they might do a panel looking at cardiovascular health, but they have this kind of system-based approach rather than looking at aging as a whole, looking at the body as a whole, and looking at what would a really good longevity panel that captures everything include. And then the third difference is the couple of biomarkers that we test that your doctor just isn't going to test. So those are things like ApoB, which is a relatively new biomarker that wouldn't be in most lipid panels, as well as some of the hormone markers as well. And just that combination isn't a panel that you would get from your family doctor.
So I'm curious if you see, I'm sure, a lot of lab tests. Yeah. And do a lot of people retest? And if so, what is helping them be more optimal? What are the things that people can do to maybe, you know, help with their cardiovascular health and reduce inflammation? What are things that people are doing out there to be optimal?
Yeah, we do see a lot of people retest. As I say, we recommend testing every 3 months. And a lot of people, I think, once they do their first test, they get really motivated. I think they get really excited by the idea of tracking those metrics. And so I'd say the first point in terms of how you can improve is just by starting to track things. Because just by being accountable, you're inherently going to start being a little bit more proactive about your health. You know that you're about to be held accountable. You know you're going to test again in the next 3 months. And it really does help people to be a little bit more proactive. A few other simple changes people can make are definitely lifestyle-based recommendations. From a sort of cholesterol perspective, there's a lot of dietary changes you can make, but I don't usually jump into diet just because I know it can be a bit controversial in the biohacking space. You got the carnivore fans, you got the vegetarian fans. The only evidence-based diet out there is the Mediterranean diet. Everything else is hearsay. And if you want to believe your friend's story about how the carnivore diet changed his life, go for it. And I'm not saying that you shouldn't, but in terms of the evidence, the Mediterranean diet is the only evidence-based diet at the moment. But I'm very excited to see how that changes as we do more studies. At Zest, we really recommend, sorry, I'll let you go.
Oh, I was just going to say, I would love to do like a full, you know, carnivore lifestyle and see how many people have, you know, great cardiovascular health. To Mark Hyman, you know, and he says he's seen people that do really well on the diet and others don't. And that's part genetics. And some people can't handle fat. So it's like all of our bodies are different, you know?
Yeah, the carnivore diet's an interesting one. I mean, after saying I didn't want to open this can of worms, I've now just done it. But, you know, we know that, as you said, we know that cardiovascular disease is the biggest cause of death in the Western world. We know that high LDL and high cholesterol from animal fat is the cause of cardiovascular disease. So it's pretty easy to argue that the carnivore diet doesn't make sense. Now, I'm very prepared to be proved wrong, and I'm excited to see what the research shows in the coming years when we do a little bit more studies into the carnivore diet. But as it is right now, there currently isn't any evidence to support it. So it's not something that I would necessarily jump into. But I know there's a lot of personal sort of N equals one studies, if you like, where people have had positive results.
Yeah, I think, you know, you have David Sinclair at Harvard saying, you know, a microdiverse diet, it is one of the best things you can do. You know, you have a diverse bacteria in your gut, things that do not come with a carnivore diet. I think people feel good on it because your gut, and it's hard. It's hard to stay away from toxins, especially in the U.S. And so your gut is just so, it's not in good shape, basically. And you go on a carnivore diet and you're like, oh, I feel great. But it's just because you're staying away probably from so many toxins.
Sure, yeah. Yeah, and then you get people like Dave Asprey who are saying that green veg is the devil because of kidney stones, which, I mean, I think is a little bit ridiculous because the incidence of kidney stones is about 10%, whereas the incidence of cardiovascular disease is much, much higher. So if you're looking at one to avoid, I'd be avoiding cardiovascular disease rather than kidney stones. But I don't know why he seems to be pushing that out.
I've actually been done ozone therapy, and this was, you know, the first time I did it, I saw fat particles in my blood through the tube because it has to go out, spin with ozone, and go back in. Right. I was shocked when you actually see, like, there are fat particles in your blood. And it was really, kind of eye-opening for me that, wow, there's fat in my blood.
Yeah, wow, that must have been scary.
She said it very common. I was like, okay. She's like, are you eating meat? I'm like, you know, not much. I've never been a big meat eater. I was actually vegan, vegetarian, raw vegan. I did it all, you know, when that fad was going through as well. So definitely it seems to be optimal for, like, you know, if you want to eat this way for 5 years, 10 years, you know, have that diversity.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you get people like Brian Johnson following the vegan diet. So I think if I could, I would do the vegan diet, but it's hard. It's hard to sustain. So definitely more of a Mediterranean dieter.
Yeah, sure. So what is the future of longevity? Where is Zest going? What are you excited for? Since this is your space, you know, this is where Zest is heading. And there's so much in this, you know, the longevity space. It's growing. You have all in. I'm so excited. So what are you seeing out there, and what is the future of Zest?
Yeah, it is a really exciting space to be involved in. And I think there's a lot of great stuff going on. In terms of the future of Zest and the goals that we're looking to achieve, for me, I think that adding 20 good years to our lifespans is what the goal of longevity science right now really should be. Just to expand upon that, you know, humans have been living to be over 100 for hundreds of years. And so I think if we were to think about what is the limit of human lifespan right now, it's about sort of 110, 120, and that's the limit of human lifespan as we know it. And we are exploring drugs and things that might change that. But right now, and I think for the next 100 or 200 years, we are probably going to be looking at 120 as the limit of human lifespan. And I'm being realistic there. I think there's a lot of talk about, you know, eternal youth and the elixir of life, and I would love that to be true. But where the research is now, I think there's still a few hundred years away before we get to that point. But that's not to say that there's not really exciting possibilities now. And we know that we can get to everyone living to be 120 because we've been doing it for hundreds of years. The longest lived human ever, Madame Jeanne Calme, was born in the 1800s and she lived to be 122. And there's people living to be over 100 everywhere all the time. But it's only less than 1% of us who actually win that genetic lottery where we become a centenarian without even trying. So the rest of us who didn't win that genetic lottery, it's about how do we replicate the phenotype in those of us who weren't born with the genotype? That is to say, how do we create that lifestyle for those of us who didn't win the genetic lottery? And to do that, it's a mixture of lifestyle interventions as a huge part of it. But I think we can't get there on our own. And we will also need to look at longevity pharma interventions at some point as and when they become available. But for now, and for what we're doing at Zest, it looks like optimizing sleep, optimizing exercise, building a really strong protocol for yourself, getting enough sunlight in the morning, you know, mental health, meditation, tracking your biomarkers really closely, things like continuous glucose monitors, you know, doing everything we can to get our markers into those optimal ranges for as long as we possibly can. And then at some point down the track, there'll be some exciting inroads with things like rapamycin, things like epigenetic reprogramming, which will help us all to get to about 120 years, which is where I think we all should be aiming for. And it's a really exciting future.
Yeah, I'm so excited. And I, you know, I hear people say, if we live, you know, another 10 years, who knows what the future is going to be for longevity, or 20 years, you just get to that point and maybe we might live to 1,000 years. I don't know.
Yeah, I think when I got into this space, I had those wide eyes of I'm going to let and make sure everyone never dies. But I think after a few years of being brought back down to earth a bit, I realized what is possible in my lifetime is getting as many people as possible to that limit of human lifespan. And I think that's still really valuable. And maybe we won't crack immortality for the next 100 years or so. But 20 good years is huge. And taking back to the fact about if we removed all cancers from the world, we would only increase the average lifespan by 3 years. And that's still valuable. But 20 good years is incredible. And think about the people on this earth that we all value, who are now getting older, people like David Attenborough. Imagine if we could get another 20 years of him. I think it really makes a difference to us as a society, how much we can pass down to future generations, how much knowledge we can gain there. And on a personal level, how much time you have with your family. So just because it's not immortality doesn't mean it's not a worthwhile pursuit.
Yeah. And I think longevity is just goes hand in hand with, you know, overall health. Mm-hmm. So, you know, these both are just so important because we all want to live a good life day to day. And, you know, add those 20 years.
Yeah. That's a really good point there about how longevity goes hand in hand with overall health. Because a criticism that I often get as a longevity scientist is, you know, I don't want to live forever. I just want to live fast and die young. And unfortunately, there's no such thing as live fast, die young. It's actually live fast, die slowly. Because if you do follow those fun, you know, lifestyles and you know, drinking and not optimizing your sleep and things, then you just have a long 20 to 30 years at the end of your life where you're a burden on the system and on your family. So even though it sounds cool, it's actually not an option. Whereas we know that when we do optimize our lives, we can be very independent and very healthy right up until the time that we die. And that's what it's all about closing that gap between health span and lifespan.
Yeah, I love that. And another quick question, are you guys going to come out with any more panels? Are you going to switch it up? Are you going to change things or add another longevity panel?
Yeah, that's a good question. There's so many things that we want to do. The one that's closest on the horizon is this brain aging test that we're building with Cambridge University. So we're really excited about making our brain aging testing even more accurate. It's something that sets us apart from every other longevity age testing brand is that we actually look at cognitive health as well. And once we build this brain aging test into our platform, not only will it make our age test even more accurate, it will create some really interesting data from a dementia research perspective as well. Once we have access to people's sort of cognitive testing cross-matched with their blood biomarkers, we can start to figure out more about what's actually going on with that cognitive aging process. And I think there could be some really exciting research that comes out of that as well.
So cool. Yeah. Can't wait.
Oh,
well, I guess, you know, since this is the Biohacker Blondie podcast, maybe I always ask 3 biohacks you want to tell the audience that you would recommend, but maybe we go that you would recommend for longevity or to help, you know, these biomarkers that they can implement daily.
Yeah, absolutely. I feel like all of my biohacks are pretty mainstream. I don't have anything really controversial. I think sleep is absolutely the number one, and not just making sure you get enough sleep, which is 7 to 8 hours, but making sure that the time that you go to bed is consistent every day, and getting that proper circadian rhythm alignment. The other one is morning sunlight, if you try and see the sunrise and the sunset. And I guess that's all part of the circadian rhythm alignment process as well. But sunlight has so many more benefits than just circadian rhythm alignment. It improves mood, it improves wound healing. It's actually linked to hormone production as well. And this is actually an interesting fact, but there were some studies done on sunlight exposure and the effect on hormones. And they found that people were more attracted to their partners and more had a higher libido when they'd had at least 30 minutes of sunlight exposure each day, which sort of explains why people are so into their summer romances. So if you really want to optimize your hormones as well and sort of those other aspects of your life, then 30 minutes of sunlight is really important as well.
Yeah, I love this.
But not too much.
All that like dopamine and serotonin when I'm in the sun, I don't know.
Yeah.
Then what is there anything you can recommend for sleep? I know a lot of people are struggling with sleep right now. Is there any hacks that you do for sleep?
Yes, I do all of the sort of sleep hygiene practices. So they talk about no screen time 3 hours before bed. Don't eat too close to bed either. So try and have your last meal more than 3 hours before bed. Magnesium, as we know, is obviously really good for sleep. But an interesting fact about magnesium is that it's actually readily absorbed through the skin as well. So taking a hot bath with magnesium salts is just as effective as taking magnesium orally. And we also know that heat exposure before bed can be really beneficial for sleep as well. So if you are incorporating sauna or heat exposure into your life, then doing it in the evening is really useful, because what happens is you end up dropping your core body temperature because you have the vasodilation of the vessels on the surface to try and sort of cool down when you're in that sauna or that hot bath. And then when you get out, you cool down really rapidly because you've got all that blood to the surface. And cooling that core body temperature is what really helps to trigger that sleep process. And then just getting the morning and evening sunlight as well to sort of trigger those melanopsin ganglion cells in the back of your eyes to produce and release melatonin.
Well, this is so great. And thank you so much for coming on the podcast and talking.
Sure.
Where can people find you? I know you have a website, Zest Science, I believe. Yeah,
that's right. Thank you so much. It's been so fun. So we have Instagram is zest.science, and my website is also zest.science. So an easy one to remember.
Okay, great. So they can go order the test, do the functional age test, and see where they're at. So
yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, thank you for coming on.
Thanks, Jenny.
Thank you so much for tuning in to this episode of the Biohacker Bonnie podcast. A huge thank you to Dr. Julia for sharing her expertise on longevity and the science behind the Zest Longevity panel. I hope you enjoyed this episode about the importance of tracking key biomarkers, the role of proactive health in closing the gap between lifespan and healthspan, and the exciting future of longevity research. If you're interested in diving deeper, you can find Dr. Julia and all the information at zest.science and on Instagram at zest.science. Don't forget to check out their functional age test to see where you stand and start optimizing your health today. If you enjoy this episode, make sure to subscribe, leave a review, and share it with someone who's passionate about living their best life. Your support helps me bring more incredible guests like Dr. Julia to the show. So until next time, keep biohacking, keep thriving, and remember, the choices you make today shape the life you'll live tomorrow.